This is your Other Brothers podcast with your hosts, Tom and Elliot.
Welcome, friends, to your Other Brothers podcast, Navigating Faith, Homosexuality, and Masculinity Together. This is Tom, and here with me are a million crickets, which we will explain in a second. But also here with me is Elliot.
Hey, everybody.
And this is exciting. Coming back for a second straight episode, we have Frank.
Hello.
And Bradley is back.
Hey.
And lastly, we have Joel, formerly known as John, on our blog.
Hey, hey.
What's up, everybody? Y'all. We're in the woods.
Yeah, we're literally in the woods right now.
This is the first time. Well, no, we've taken our podcast on the road before. We've taken it to two retreats now, including our most recent episode. We were at a retreat in a nice, cushy house. But now, we are literally outside. This is our first outdoors podcast. And if you listen, let's all be quiet for a second. Okay. You can hear nature all around. Do you all hear that?
Yes.
I hear it.
No, we're so primal right now, which is fitting because we're talking about manliness in this episode. So it's like, what better topic to discuss when you're out in the woods in a tent? Let's paint the visual, because right now no one can really appreciate what's happening right now if we don't paint the visual. Does someone want to describe the scene? Frank.
There's a lot of darkness.
There's a lot of darkness.
It's nighttime.
It is nighttime. We have two iPhones illuminating light from the ceiling of a tent.
One is an Android.
Okay.
Amen.
We have an Android. We have an Android and an iPhone illuminating us. Which one's providing more light? It's hard to tell.
iPhone, hands down.
It's the Android.
I mean, hands up, the iPhone, not hands down.
So yeah, we're in a tent. We're in like is this, Joel, this is your tent. It's a four-person tent.
Or six. Four six. To six.
It's a six to nine.
We've got five of us around our microphone, so we're making that work. And we've got a microphone plugged into a laptop sitting on a cardboard box in the middle of a tent.
No cell signal.
No cell signal.
It's fantastic.
It's like, it's okay,
we don't even know where we really are in the world.
Oh, true.
We're in the middle of a forest on a mountain.
By a lake.
Kind of.
Somewhere between North Carolina and Tennessee, we haven't discovered exactly.
Maybe in Georgia, we're not sure.
Georgia's not too far, yeah. And we can hear...
Ooh.
Wow.
There's like a super cricket.
Was that a warning?
No.
I could be communicating to another bird. Warning. Something is coming.
Oh, yeah.
The apocalypse is coming.
They're probably warning other birds about us, to be honest.
We should mention that the reason we're here right now, other than to record a podcast on manliness, is that in this day and time, I don't like to date the podcast, you know?
Yeah, you do.
Because someone's going to listen to this 50 years from now and be like, why in the world were they in the woods on this night in time? But in this moment in time, we're at a critical juncture, y'all, where the apocalypse is occurring tomorrow. This is like the eclipse that you keep hearing about on Twitter and Facebook, and everyone's talking about it.
We're about to burn our retinas out.
We're about to burn our retinas. The eclipse is happening tomorrow as of this recording. And we're like really close to the line of totality, which is super epic.
It's very epic.
Yeah. Kids.
So,
but this is like an America thing, right?
Right. This is for our international...
All of our international listeners. No, the eclipse is happening in America. A full solar eclipse.
Full solar eclipse. The first full solar eclipse in like 100 years, apparently. But then like...
But I feel like we get those every month. When I was elementary school, we saw one.
Those must have been partial.
It was partial.
There was one in the 90s,
But then like I read on the internet that these things just are going to be happening every 5 years now from the rest of
Well, it's always something, right? I know. Like every month.
like, yeah, supermoon.
Eclipse today, something tomorrow.
Avian flu, like, they just say stuff. Get us riled up. I don't know.
Bradley, you're on a roll today.
Wow.
Oh, it's hot, so you know how it is. Yeah.
So if, y'all, if the apocalypse does happen tomorrow and it's our last podcast together, it was an honor to fight with you brothers.
Well, they wouldn't have heard it because I didn't have time to edit it, so.
No, it'll be, like, in the wreckage that generations from now.
Discovered, like, those movies.
Yeah. When,
like,
it's apes.
Found
like,
footage.
In the year 4,700, they'll discover this, and they'll hear about the five boys who went into the woods to record a podcast.
Five men after this weekend.
Five men.
They'll be like, dudes used to be attracted to other dudes, what?
Maybe, yeah. Possibly.
I feel like they would have evolved past attractions to a person. It's just intelligence.
Moving on.
Technology.
Let's theorize on this future generation that discovers our podcast from the wreckage. What do you see them?
Oh, yeah.
Looking
he'd
be like the last thing they listen
no,
to.
No, they're probably going to be like, what are men? Because we're all one gender now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this
foolish
is too much.
So, y'all, this would normally be the part of the podcast where I talk about our podcast and how we're on iTunes and we're able to be reviewed and subscribed to. And I had this awesome review saved. I thought I had it saved on my phone.
Oh, no.
It was like someone left us a review, and it was really supportive because they all are. Everyone loves our show.
Was the guy that didn't have SSA, but it was like, I like you guys?
Well, no, that was last time. There was one last time, Edgar.
I read
his review, and he was super supportive, yeah. But there was another one, and I honestly, I don't have it. I looked on my phone, and I don't have it. And I have no service because we're in the middle of either North Carolina or Tennessee.
Bummer.
So... thank you to whoever that was. We'll read that next time. But the point is, the moral of the story is, if you enjoy our show and love our show, you can help further our progress, extend our reach by just doing this simple thing, and that is subscribing to our show, rating our show, and just typing up a quick little review of our show.
Give us stars, y'all.
Give us those stars. Yeah, if you like what we're doing, that would that'd be awesome. And then additionally, we have our Patreon group, which we... love.
We love
our
yobbers.
They're the yobbers, and they're the best. We've met so many of them now.
And they're so much fun.
Breaking news, we officially broke 100.
Oh,
we are now in the triple digits
We're
of
in the
yobbers.
Triple
we have
digits
over
of
100
yobbers.
Now.
That is insane. Could you have ever thought that 100 people would listen to us, let alone support us. That is insane.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and we're getting to meet several of them. I'm on a I'm currently on a road trip actually across America, and I've met about 10 just on this trip alone. I've already met several before this trip, but it's really exciting getting to meet these guys in person.
Yeah.
Grab meals with them, grab coffee with them, hear their stories, trade some stories, and it's just been a beautiful thing. So thank you to all of our yobbers. If you want to support what we're doing, if you're interested at all in becoming a yobber, you can go to patreon.com/yourotherbros. And all the information is there. And we'd love to have you join us in the triple digits. Triple digit club.
Woo, triple D. Woo.
All right, so you guys, this is episode 20 of the Yobcast. Episode 20. Y'all, we're at 20 episodes. This
wow.
is crazy. Hundreds of yobbers. Well, 100 yobbers. And 20 episodes of our podcast. And y'all, we have a very special sponsor today on our podcast on manliness. Bradley, would you mind giving our sponsor read for this episode?
This episode's sponsor is Car Parts. Do you need a defibrillator? Trick question. You should know whether or not that goes in your car. Car Parts.
Car Parts. Gosh, yeah. That is a great sponsor because everyone needs car parts.
Yeah.
Well, Elliot, you don't because you.
I don't have a car anymore, but
well,
I did.
Everyone else does.
Have a lot of car parts.
Do you?
I don't now.
Oh,
I did, and I
Can you name them?
Engine coil. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Dishwasher I paid $100 for that thing. I'll remember its name forever.
Is dishwasher fluid a car part?
Oh.
Blinker fluid.
It can be.
Yeah.
If you really want it to.
I think so.
Oh. I don't think an additive counts as a car part.
A spare tire.
That's a good one. A donut.
A donut.
Oh, yum.
Yeah. So thank you, Car Parts, for sponsoring our manliness episode.
Woo.
So, y'all, I thought it only fitting to open this manliness episode by reading from the Ron Swanson Pyramid of Greatness. If y'all watch Parks and Recreation,
please.
You know there was an episode where he was, what was he doing? He was like coaching
He's coaching basketball.
Yeah. And he's got like all his boys lined up, and then he like reveals this billboard, this cardboard with all of this like manly stuff on a pyramid. And I thought it'd be fun to read some of those and just get y'all's reaction to what our hero Ron Swanson said. So at the top of the Ron Swanson pyramid of greatness, the ultimate source of manliness, he has the word honor. If you need it defined, you don't have it.
Mm.
So there's that. He also has woodworking, weapons, selfishness, take what's yours.
Whoa.
He's got suspicion, do not trust anyone else.
You better preach.
Self-reliance, trust yourself. He's got chicken protein, pig protein, cow protein.
Yes.
So he's got all the proteins covered. He's got he's got masonry. Building walls makes you strong. Defending them makes you even stronger.
Wow.
He's got living in the woods, which is clearly super manly. I mean, we're doing it right now.
Yeah, we're basically doing it.
So manly.
Perspiration. Only sweat during physical activity or lovemaking. No emotional sweating. So there's a Ron Swansonism.
No
right
promises.
There. Oh, here's a good one. Crying. Acceptable at funerals and the Grand Canyon. That's it. And skim milk. Avoid it. Is what Ron Swanson says.
Oh my gosh,
says.
I just watched the episode like yesterday where he says, I hate lies. I hate liars. And I also hate skim milk, which is just water that's lying and
about
saying
being milk.
About being milk, yeah.
So great. He has handshakes. Firm, dry, solid. 3 seconds. So specific. So that's a little assortment of Ron Swanson. I mean, there's like literally 50 of them, and they're all hilarious, so you guys should read that. Oh, there's also deer protein. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Deer protein.
Oh, deer. Mm.
So that's a little primer on manliness. What are y'all's thoughts on manliness? Let's go around. Let's have a fun exercise. Let's go around. I'm kind of putting y'all on the spot. How would you define manliness?
Come to me last.
No me.
So that means you should go first.
The last shall be first.
Definitely. I mean, anyone who has a definition to offer, what do you think manliness is?
Manliness.
In its basic, most basic form.
That's so difficult.
Qualities of being a man.
Well, okay. I feel like, okay.
So what are the
That's
qualities
basic.
Of being a man?
So then
you
have
a penis.
Diet.
I mean, you're saying a definition of manliness is qualities that be a man, but that's so vague.
Well, I flipped it to make it easier to understand, because I feel like if you just look at it for manliness, it's like, well, what is that? But if you think of it in terms of what would you think qualities of being a man are, then maybe it's easier to approach.
But that's, like, dependent upon so many different circumstances and cultural
well,
contexts.
Well, exactly.
So you could be, I mean, there's, like, a cultural standard of manly, but then there's, like, maybe a personal experience of manly, and then maybe there's a potentially biblical standard
right.
of manliness.
Right, it's confusing. You'd have to decide which one you're going to be talking about. If you're talking about something that's personal to you, something that you would describe in another person stereotypically, or if you look at it from a biblical standpoint.
I don't like when people say personal. Like, I mean, I see this differently. Just because it's personal to you doesn't make it, like, fact. I think the better word is standard, because just because you've experienced does not make that manly. Just because you did it,
sure,
does not make it manly. So there is a standard out there. What is that standard?
Well,
I have
who set the standard?
Ron Swanson.
Mm-hmm. There's a pyramid out there.
There is a pyramid.
I think a biblical standard is probably
what we would abide.
Yeah.
But what is that?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Could you pick, like,
people more? Always say, look at Jesus. I'm like, stop saying that. That's the easy route out. Because y'all... I'm going on a tangent.
I agree. Stop looking at Jesus so much.
We can't see him.
And also, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's necessarily a full picture of masculinity, right? Because he was limited to a certain context
and
time
we only have
frame.
A small glimpse of what he did. Right. So, I mean, I think there are obvious aspects of him that could point to a manly guy or some sort of, like, masculinity, but... For me, it kind of rubs me the wrong way when people just give that quick, short answer. Mm-hmm. Well, look at Jesus. I'm looking at him. What am I supposed to see? Like, I don't get it.
What about David? David is often lauded as,
David.
Like, the manliest man that ever was.
Yeah.
Or Solomon.
And the cool thing about David is that there's, like, the two sides of him. There's the warrior and the guy who went into battle and the guy who...
Wrote a book of
slain
poems.
Slain his thousands upon thousands. Mm-hmm. But then you have, a guy that wrote his poems, danced in his underwear.
Plays a harp.
Plays a harp, yeah. So
kissed his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh, kissed his best friend. That's a good episode. One of our yabbers commented, doesn't masculinity come in many flavors? Seriously, isn't the whole point that we don't have to manifest masculinity in any stereotypical way? What do y'all think about that? Is masculinity varied, or is it one size fits all?
Well, I think it is varied in a sense. Like, it's maybe expressed differently in different cultures and time periods, but I think there might be some underlying common threads that tie it all together. That there is, like, a core standard of something that's there, but maybe those core values are expressed differently in different times and cultures. Does that make sense? Because I can't just say, okay, you are a man genetically, so therefore everything that you do is manly, because that's not fair, because you could be pretending or acting or taking on the role of something that's not masculine. Because isn't there a possibility that there is a man who is genetically male, or there is a male who is not acting manly and needs to correct that? Or is not behaving manly?
Yeah. Do you mind reading that comment to me again? Because to me it sounds sort of like, I don't want to say a cop-out, but again, there is a standard. Like, just because you do not possess those qualities don't mean you get to go and brand something else that is outside of that standard. Mm. Now, part of the masculine or manly or, you know, those qualities, like, you just, I'm sorry, but that's not how it
works. I would agree with that.
One of our yabbers says, as far as diversity and masculinity, he says, even if you look at the men in the Bible who we would consider our examples, you find that they're all different. Yet you cannot deny that any of them was masculine. David was musical, yet when he needed to, he took up and murdered a man who many more obviously masculine men failed to kill. Moses killed a man who was beating a slave and then ran to hide because he was scared of the repercussions of his actions. Yet when God called, he answered. Think about the disciples themselves. They were working class men who gave up everything they knew to follow Christ and afterward continued to spread the good news. They were from all different walks of life, looked differently, and were built differently as well, yet we consider them to be masculine. I say all that to say that there has to be more to masculinity as Christians that we're not understanding. I, for one, don't have a clue what that is, but I know it's there.
So this is just coming to me as you were reading that, so I'm just going to sort of think out loud for a minute here, but what are the words intrinsic and extrinsic? Is that are those the right terms? Okay. So I feel like maybe there are some intrinsic qualities of manliness or masculinity, and then there is extrinsic, and I think we need to focus more on the intrinsic ones, but we're focusing more on the extrinsic. So
yes.
In our culture, we focus on, like, what is your career choice, or what is your attire choice? Like, what are you wearing? What are you doing for activities and hobbies, and what are you doing for your career? Those are the things that define masculinity. So you're a lumberjack and you have a beard and you wear flannel, that's manliness, but that's just all external stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some qualities that maybe can span multiple different professions and outward appearances, but are, you could say, the all of those different people that may look different, have different jobs, all possess the same intrinsic quality of manliness. And I can't necessarily put, like, words to that right now, but something like, is that making sense? Like, trustworthiness or faithfulness is, like, a manly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel like when you mention a lumberjack, one of the reasons why people, like, latch onto a lumberjack is not only, like, we were, I guess, only able to understand his physical attributes, the way he looks, but the reason why people love lumberjacks is because the environment they live in, and they were able to persevere and be courageous and provide for the family and do all these things, and then that evolved into the lumberjack, like, archetype. And now, so, since men today aren't living in the wilderness where they have to do things for their wives and for their children, so they can't actually be a lumberjack, but we can at least grow a beard and dress in plaid and wear boots and portray the lumberjack, like, persona without actually having to do anything, which is why I have a problem with people who, like, not have a problem, I don't want to say I don't trust them because I'm not Mr. Swanson, but, like, whenever I see people in lifted trucks or in Jeeps, I think that comes from the whole I can portray something, but I don't have possess these, like, innate qualities of being this guy who can do all these things, live in this, you know, outback country. And, you know, I go mudding 24/7 and I do this and do that.
There's a lot of posers.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it points to people want to be these things, but they don't have, especially in our society, like, if a man wants to, you know, go out and cut down a tree, well, he can't really cut down a tree. You know, he has other responsibilities that may come to the forefront of him just being able to express these parts of his personality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, conversations about masculinity seem to be very superficial. Like, what are you wearing? How are you acting? The big thing for me has always been the beard thing. Like, I have some facial hair now, but I was always super, super resistant to growing any facial hair because of the conversations about beards making a man and blah, blah, blah. And it, like, made me so angry. And I was like, no, I'm a man and I can be a man and I don't need a stinking beard to do that. Like, no. And then, like, going back to the Bible, I always think of, like, Samson, who superficially is a very manly character, but when you really look at everything he did, he was, like, probably one of the biggest, like, duds of all the people in the Bible. And, yeah, God still used him in the end, but he, like, got his eyes gouged out and he died. But, like, he was terrible. He did everything wrong, but he was, like, manly. He killed enemies and got the girl, but, like, he was terrible. So there's more to outside.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of external masculinity going on in our culture today. I think, at least from my perspective, I feel like I've seen a lot of it, I guess, in my area, some, I guess, that southern masculinity at play where they can easily point out posers, people who dress like lumberjacks and have lifted trucks, people who aren't necessarily outwardly masculine other than their looks and their stuff. But I would say at the same token that those same people pointing them out could also be lacking some intrinsic masculinity, and a lot of, from my personal conviction, biblical masculinity as well. I think, I can't remember where exactly, but it talks about in the Bible about a, gosh, I can't even remember, a quiet strength, I believe is what it's called. And I had a pastor growing up who labeled it as a velvet-covered steel. Someone who has a hard, firm outlook on life and was held strong in their convictions, but also very, I wouldn't say tender necessarily, but not a rough exterior, someone, you know, who's very genuine and authentic and very real with people, and but still able to be unshaken in their convictions and their strengths.
Okay, so I want to respond to your comment about beards and being external masculine, because I actually have a relatively large beard currently. But I was exactly the same way for pretty much ever since I could grow a beard. Like, all the way up through college, I did not have facial hair. And people would ask me, like, why don't you grow a beard? Or a lot of guys would say, like, you should have facial hair, you should have a beard, you should do it, blah, 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 grow it out. And I was always really resistant to it because I felt exactly the same way of, I don't need this to prove anything. And I just didn't like it. It was uncomfortable. I had no desire to do it. And I would always say, if I had a choice to, like, take a pill that would prevent me from growing facial hair, I would do it because I'm over this. I don't want it. I don't care about it. But I guess I've come to a point now where it's like, I can't do that. This is going to grow. And God designed my face to grow hair there. So I'm going to, like, let it be. And he didn't design women to grow hair there on their face. So that is some sort of essential genetic quality that differentiates me from the other sex. So I'm just going to let it grow. Also, it's expensive to buy razors, let's be real.
I wanted to add a point to what Joel said also. We were talking about, you know, the lifted trucks and the plaid and putting on a show as a sign of masculinity. But I also think that a lot of us, a lot of them, haven't been taught what true masculinity is. So all they have is what the society at large teaches them is masculinity, which is a fast car, fast girls, like all these things that we are fed to believe prove our masculinity is what we abide by, is what we latch on to. So I don't think it's just like a fake facade thing. Sometimes just we don't know. So what else are we gonna do? Someone's gotta teach us.
Right. I think a lot of our culture just, they have no model, and so that's what they're told, and that's what they're shown, and so they just sort of subconsciously go after that.
Yeah, I think trucks, like, back to trucks, I think trucks have always been a, I don't want to say fixture, but I'm going to say it because I don't have a better word, a fixture in masculinity. Like, when you think of the working man, you always think of, like, a pickup truck. So that has always been around, but... I am weary of the direction that it's taken now, because it's not just, like, guys aren't using these trucks to work in. They're using them to show something else. So why do you feel the need to show something else? So that's where, again, I get weary.
I personally had felt peer pressured to buying a truck growing up. I always thought that it would make me appear more masculine. Besides the fact that I like driving higher up vehicles, and that's what I grew up learning to drive on. So there's a little bit of mixture of preference and, I guess, almost a superficial borderline toxic masculinity going on there. So it's definitely something to further discuss and navigate for me personally.
Jesus didn't have a pickup truck.
Jesus didn't have a magic carpet right either.
Are you sure we Jesus all know he drove a Honda up in Texas? I feel like he did.
He drove a Honda, but he didn't talk about it. He did not speak of his own accord.
He was probably a hybrid.
So let me ask you guys this. Did y'all experience manliness as a young boy? Did you see it modeled somewhere? What were your thoughts on manliness growing up? So for me personally, I've written about this multiple times. I was involved in a father-son program with my father in a church, and part of the father-son program was, it was sort of like Boy Scouts in a way, but kind of not. It was like a Christianized version, so you could like do activities and get badges and earn badges for your uniform, for your shirt. And so there'd be stuff like learning how a toilet works, or learning how to change the oil in your car, or running a 100 meter, you know, in 20 seconds or less or something, or, you know, or memorizing scripture, you know. So there's like all these different components, things that we had to do in addition to our just usual activities. Like we'd go hiking, we'd do a camp out a couple times a year with all the other fathers and sons. So that was my like lens through manliness and manhood as a boy, and learning masculinity from probably as young as age 7 or 8 up until age 11 maybe. That was my reality. But what about y'all? What did you experience?
Okay, my first, like, guttural reaction when you said, did you see manliness modeled for you as a child? The first, like, image that popped into my head was a man wearing, like, khaki slacks and a plaid short-sleeve button-up shirt that was tucked in and a mustache, and he was mowing the lawn. And that just makes me, like, kind of sick to my stomach, like this idea of the men that I remember in my life in the late 80s, early 90s was just this sort of like that. To me, that was what masculine, like mowing the lawn and having a mustache. And I guess I'm gonna have to like think harder about that question, but that was the first like just image that popped to my head. And I remember thinking that they were always stressed out and all they were talking about was balancing their checkbook. And like we live in a day and age now where it's like I don't even have a check. I mean, I don't know. It's all on the internet.
Checkbook.
I mean, I write checks, you know what I mean? But it's all logged on the internet, so I don't have to like, but that was like, oh, when you know, as an adult and as a man, you need to learn how to like change your oil in your car and balance your checkbook. It's like, okay, or I could pay somebody to do that and the internet logs my checkbook. You know, like why? So I don't know. To me, what was modeled was a just very flimsy cultural thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, thoughts right off the bat on that. My dad was always very much a blue-collar worker, did road construction and demolition and everything like that. And so jobs that were definitely kind of stereotypically masculine. But growing up, I just never cared about any of that stuff. Like, no interest in learning about how the car worked or about fixing anything or plumbing or the electricity. I still am freaked out by electricity. It's like black magic to me. and I just haven't had interest. And yeah, I don't know. So I feel like that model was there, but I just didn't pay attention to it or feel the need to follow it. And so I don't know if that meant I didn't think about or care about masculinity. I just was busy being me, maybe.
Was it ever, like, put upon you, though? Because I feel like, for me, it was... Or maybe, like, the older I got more towards puberty and, you know, teenage years, it was definitely more... You got to learn to be a man, and this is what a man does. And it became more like a verbal, like, you know... It was more outspoken and direct about it, as before it was just... Like, I honestly can't remember any real... Like, Tom, you mentioned a father-son thing. Like, I don't remember any moments where it was, we are modeling masculinity and manliness for you, and this is what you're going to become, and this is what you need to look towards. Like, I never had anybody directly put that, tell me that this is what you're going to... It was always just sort of indirectly presumed upon me that... or. This is what the men are, so this is what I'm going to become. But I just didn't really care about those things, like you said, Frank. But I guess it wasn't until puberty or teenagers when they were like, this is what a man has to do. But it was always those sort of superficial things, like learn how a car works, or had nothing to do with my character. It had to do with more of my skills, I guess.
Right. Yeah. As time went on, there were definitely times where I did kind of get pulled along with certain things, like, oh, we're gonna go out with the friends and shoot guns, or, like, I need you to help me come fix this. And I would do it, and I would listen, but I, like, had no interest in, like, retaining those skills or that knowledge or anything like that. And so I kind of begrudgingly would go along, but I didn't make any of it, like, a part of my identity, I guess.
Yeah, I just wanted to add in a comment that, for me, I think it was kind of echoes what Frank said, but I don't think he worded it this way, so I'm going to. That growing up, for me, was that being a man was about what he does and not about who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're beginning to find out that a man is who he is first and then what he does.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Well, that's always the question, though, amongst men. Mm-hmm. Even when you, like, meet somebody for the first time. Oh, hi, my name is, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
That's always the question that's asked first. What do you do? What's mm-hmm. your job? What do you do? And that is defines who you are, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for me, in my personal experience, I have a lot of mixed emotions about this. I grew up in a family of 4 boys and 2 girls. So there's a little bit of mixture in how masculinity was modeled for me. From my actual blood brothers, and then my dad and other men in my life. I attended Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts all the way from kindergarten up through age 18.
Dang. So, are you an Eagle Scout?
I am, actually. I am
no
actually
way.
An Eagle Scout.
Whoa.
Actually, I have respect for that.
So, unfortunately, I did not enjoy that process in my life. It was definitely, I mean, it was an accomplishment, of course, but it was also something that I did not do for myself, and I did not do, and I did begrudgingly, actually. It was nothing I ever wanted to pursue. I mean, it was definitely something I did because my dad wanted me to do it, and I wanted to, it was something that he regretted not doing in his life, and so it was something I did because he wanted me to do that, and it was just something I very much struggled with. It was something that was kind of forced upon me, and it was easier for me to go with it than go against it. There's a mixture of really positive masculine experiences and a lot of toxic masculine experiences. And this is something I could talk about for hours on end. There's definitely some great moments I had with my dad and Boy Scouts and with other older men and other guys in the group that definitely shaped how I am now and teaching me very valuable skills. And then there's several other, you know, very negative experiences about, you know, a man has to do X, Y, Z, otherwise you're not a man, or, you know, you name it. And then with all that said, throughout a lot of that turned me off to a lot of stereotypical masculine things that I did not care for, and since they were being shoved in my face, I refused to take any interest in them. So I just have a lot of, like, mixed feelings about what it means to be a man and what people have told me, and so I have to sort through and really think about it, and I have a hard time taking advice from people because I've had such a crazy experience with all of that?
So I've talked about often, I feel like I talk about this all the time, my disconnect with the other boys and how I grew up in a super academic, or I'm sorry, a super athletic class, and most of the boys played football. And so most of my peers, what I learned from manliness as far as the other peers were, it was that you played football, it was that you told dirty jokes, it was that you know, did all these other things that were foreign to me. And I was intrigued by this comment from a Yabra. I want to get y'all's thoughts on this. And he said, this is something I find a bit mysterious. So many guys with SSA, including me, talk about our experiences as boys or younger men, feeling disconnected from other men, the world of men, masculinity, if you will. We talk about how we believe it's important to find healthy, non-sexual ways to connect with men. But at the same time, so many seem to be extremely resistant to more classically masculine pursuits and interests. The things in which the men we probably want to feel connected to are most likely interested. How do we reconcile that? I don't think it's necessary for me to be intensely interested in football to connect with these men, but I think there's something really healthy about our being willing to find ways to connect with the masculine physical world. Are we expecting them to join us in our more artistic, aesthetic, or sensitive pursuits in order for a connection with them to be made? Is that fair? And it goes on and on. He actually types up a bunch of stuff. And then there's actually a follow-up to that. Someone else said, I think you're absolutely right. This is something we should be doing more of. Male connection is available to us, mm-hmm. but it might involve doing things that aren't our favorite. At the end of the day, I still think it's worth it. And they threw in the example about, like, going to watch a football game with somebody, even if you hate football. So... Joel, what do you have to say to these yobbers commenting about manliness amongst our peers?
I think a lot of this has to do with maturity as a human being, not necessarily your thoughts on masculinity. If you want to be closed off and closed-minded and kind of wallow in this negative sense of masculinity, you can go ahead and do that. But if you want to actually grow in any area of your life, you definitely need to be willing and open to other people's ideas and thoughts and stuff. I have definitely worked to try and, you know, be involved in other people's interests, whether I cared about them or not, in any aspect, whether that was masculine or not, or whether that was just my friends or my parents or my family or other things. I think that just has to do with being a reasonable human being, not necessarily... This doesn't even have to be SSA related. It's just a part of your life. And yeah, those are my quick thoughts.
Preach! I'm sorry. Like, yes. Yes. A mature human is willing to, for the sake of a relationship with anybody, it doesn't matter gender, whatever, you have to be willing to engage in things that you're not interested or... you don't understand for the sake of a relationship. But that has nothing to do with masculinity. But I think one of the major flaws in this Yabra's comment was us versus them. He literally said us and them, as if there was something so fundamentally different about us from them that we need to make this bridge, we have to cross this bridge into this world of masculinity that we don't fit into. And should we ask them to cross over to our side? And it's just, to me, like, that is the fundamental flaw in the thinking, is that they are so far from us because of... And he uses this word, the world of masculinity, and my first thought is, what do you even mean by that? Are you talking about... And he mentions football multiple times. So you're talking about the world of sports or the world of cars or the world of whatever... These interests or hobbies or out exterior things are the world of masculinity. Well, if that's true, then there's like hundreds and thousands of different facets of all these people who are not on the same page. So how can we say which one is masculinity? Which one does everybody else have to get to and cross the bridge to get to? That to me is the flaw in this, is that masculinity has to transcend all of that crap. All of your interests and all that kind of stuff. And I, as a child, I didn't necessarily feel different from men. I knew I was a boy. I knew I was a male species of the human race. I didn't have the same interests as the majority of human males, at least in my experience in this culture and in my context of a small town America. But is it my responsibility to go to that image of what I saw of what most men liked in order to affirm myself as a male? No, I don't think so. Do I need to require them to come to my side? No, I don't think so either. I think the issue is way more core and rooted than all of that external stuff. And it's not an us versus them. We're all males.
There's no sides.
Right. Yeah, as I think about that, it makes me think of growing up, I had a lot of insecurities regarding certain sides of my extended family. And when I think about it now, I had a lot of, like, insecurities or assumptions of how my family saw me. Mm-hmm. And as far as, like, oh, I didn't like doing all of the, like, shooting or watching the football game and things like that. And I tended to, like, sit in the kitchen and snack while, like, my aunts and my grandmas, like, chit-chatted and whatever. And so it wasn't, and I never thought of it as, like, in questioning in regards to my manliness. I was more concerned of, oh, my gosh, like, my uncles think that I'm, like, lazy or, like, not intelligent, or I don't have, like, what it takes to, like, you know, it was all these other core values that I felt were being judged, not manliness itself. Because I didn't question, like you said, Elliot, about manliness. I didn't question that in myself. It was all of these other things.
Bradley, you have a lot to say, I think.
I do have a lot to say, but I am going to keep it condensed because I don't want to ramble. So actually, I like a lot of what he said. I don't see what he said as an us versus them, as we are others, we are different than them. I think there is there's an understanding of that in this SSA, like, lifestyle or world that we live, that we don't fully connect to what's going on in the typical lifestyle. So, and I think it sounds like there is an us versus them because whoever, you know, made that comment may or may not have personal relationships with a lot of these guys. So what I hear him saying through my own, experiences, I have friends who I want to connect to, and we don't share the same interests. And even though these interests are stereotypical, stupid interests that may be football or shooting or
NASCAR,
yeah, because I love him and want to spend time with him and want to know him more, I'm going to do all these stupid activities, not because I like them, but because I like him. And I also think a lot of this, especially when it comes to sports, which is a tenth of an eighth, a twelfth of our problems, is that a lot of the guys, a lot of us have shame that keep us from getting into these activities. And they don't want to be embarrassed because they see themselves as less than or as less capable. And the truth is, you might be less capable, but that shouldn't stop you from trying to participate, because if you try and participate, maybe in a couple of weeks you'll be more capable, but you'll never know unless you keep your shame from allowing you to, you know, connect with guys. And it might be throwing a football around. I mean, again, I wrote a post about sports where I sucked, but I did it anyway, not allowing my shame to keep me from these activities because I love my friends. And so if this is a way to spend time with them, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to let my shame inside. I'm going to feel the embarrassment because I love my friends. So, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that concept. And it's something I really struggle with, of doing something with someone because you care about them as a person and you want to be finding value in something because someone you care about finds value in that. I totally believe in that. But I have a lot of bitterness regarding that too, because looking back, I feel like I've always been the one to do that for other people, and I haven't really had deep experiences where people have done that for me. Mm. And so I get really kind of worked up and weird, where I kind of just want to shut off because there are things that I am very interested in, care about, and I even try to kind of talk to them from people, and I feel like I typically get, like, shrugged off, like, yeah, I don't really care. And it's just like, that was kind of it. So I just, like, really wrestle with that. I believe in the concept, but it also brings up a lot of, like, kind of pain.
Well, I think the problem is that if we're assuming that men who love sports and cars and all these kinds of things are the standard and they're okay exactly how they are and where they're at, and we, who may not be interested in those things, who are same-sex attracted, have to traverse this gap to get to them, to relate to them in order to affirm our own masculinity, and that's the reason why we're doing it. I would not I would not endorse that. That the reason that you need to go watch football with another guy is so that you feel more like another guy. If you love that guy just for who he is as your friend, and you want to love him and you want to go watch football with him because you care about him, great, do it. But not because you're trying to fill in this gap or this void within your own life. But as Joel said before, that doing that is just a mark of mature human. So it wouldn't necessarily have to do anything with masculinity. And I would hope that those other men who care about you would be willing to do something that you're interested in, not to affirm their masculinity or to pity you in your lack of masculinity, but simply because they love you.
Exactly.
I think a lot of SSA guys obsess over this gap between, which honestly I feel like there isn't that much of a gap. Mm-hmm. It's like they almost perpetuate. I mean, I don't want to tell people that they're perpetuating, but if you are, if the shoe fits, I mean,
perpetuate it.
You're perpetuating something that's not really that serious. Like, it's literally just football. It's not that hard. Like, it's not that difficult. It's not that much different. We're created in God's image, and I just get kind of frustrated with some people where they're like, oh, we're so different and we're so isolated. And, like, you know, there's balance, obviously, between, like, having empathy and understanding, you know, the rejection and stuff versus people perpetuating the stereotype that they supposedly hate. But, yes, it goes such a long way for there to be equal parts on each side for saying loving people how they are and being able to engage in different activities that may not, you know, be your strength. For me, like, growing up, obviously I did the Boy Scout thing for my dad, begrudgingly at some times, but also because I knew it would make him happy, and I knew that it was something that he wanted to do and was never able to do, and so he was able to live that kind of vicariously through me. And then I grew up going to football games with my dad. Every now and then he would get season tickets for college football games, and we would go every now and then whenever, you know, we had the chance to go and they were at home games. And it wasn't something that I really liked. And, you know, we would go do things like he liked playing golf, and I honestly hate golf. I'm sorry if you're hearing me say this, but I really don't like golf. But it's something that I will do because I care about my dad and I love my dad and I want to do things that they, you know, that he enjoys and that other people enjoy. So I think it's very important.
What about mini golf?
Mini golf.
Mini golf is
the most masculine thing.
Mini golf is not real golf.
It's wonderful.
I love mini golf.
Different podcast.
Bradley, so mini golf, you practice putting. That is totally golf.
You know who putts? And you know what it takes?
Tiger Woods.
Strategy.
Yeah.
And skill. And yeah. Like a keen eye.
Do you bounce off the wall?
That's what people don't play real sports at.
Do you bounce off the wall, or do you go under the tunnel, or do you go through the windmill, or do you go around the windmill?
Or do you turn around and go
this
play real golf?
This is the part where y'all start overthinking things.
Okay, I have one more comment before we move on. So I didn't engage in these activities to affirm my masculinity, but I found my masculinity affirmed through those activities. So I saw, not only was I this emotional guy, or this kind male, but now I find myself to also be a strong male, or a fast male. So then I see these aspects of myself that I held on to, and then I find myself discovering these new aspects. So not only, again, was I affirmed in being this kind, funny, smart guy, I now also see that, hey, I am also strong like the rest of them. So I didn't engage for the affirmation. I just found my affirmation in putting myself in these uncomfortable situations where I had to rise to the occasion of being, you know, those stereotypical, you know, guys. What am I saying?
I got you.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yes.
You're done.
Is the difference of intent. Yeah.
Another Yabber says, I think we focus too much on what is manliness because we feel self-conscious about it and look for how we can be viewed by the world as true, real men. I don't think the Bible says be manly, rather be holy. Every time I read a Christian blog post about biblical manliness, I always find them to really be just describing the fruit of the Spirit both genders should be displaying. Which goes back to something, Elliot, you said in a recent podcast. You were talking about how the fruit of the Spirit, you had like a... someone presented it. Was it in a classroom?
It was
or something?
In my university, yeah.
Yeah, and how it's like, what is the fruit of the Spirit, and how it's like people think of them in an effeminate way, but how mm-hmm. they really are for both genders, and how they're equally as masculine as they are effeminate. But yeah, no, I resonate with what you were saying, Joel, about like feeling separate and kind of wallowing in that. But I'm a wallower, so if I don't get to wallow, I don't have my identity. And if I don't have my identity, then who am I?
You
so
don't
that's where
need
it's
a wallowing
hard.
Identity.
I know, and I've found it easy. Like, it's actually, it has turned easier than I thought it to be, because like I will play Ultimate Frisbee. Like, I remember there was a time I played Ultimate Frisbee with the guys, and I was good at it, and I was talented, and I caught the Frisbee, and I ran fast, and it wasn't as scary as I mm-hmm. imagined it out to be. And that's kind of a metaphor for life, isn't it? Ultimate Frisbee with the boys.
I agree. I mean, I understand what you're saying, Tom, that and even that comment that I said, there was a flaw in his comment, because there's the us versus them statement. I have a dual response to that, because I feel the disconnect and I feel the gap, and often it feels like it is us versus them, but the reality is that that's a flaw. Mm. That doesn't, that's
our
like
feelings
a,
are not the whole truth.
That's right.
Our
feelings Amen. Are not the whole truth. So I empathize and I resonate and I get it. I get that there is this feeling of disconnect, but I don't think that's the whole truth.
So yeah, we can't have a manliness podcast without mentioning the manliest book, the manliest book in all of Christianity, which
oh,
is Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. Now, this book, you're hearing a lot of reactions right now, but this book is highly revered amongst certain men.
Really?
Some people really love Wild at Heart. It's like...
Where are they?
The subtitle is Discovering the Secret of a Man's Soul. So there are some people who really love this book. And then we have other comments. So we had some... I'm just going to share with y'all some verbatim comments from Wild at Heart. One of our favorite Yabbers just simply said this: I hate Wild at Heart, that is all. And so he's telling me if I don't kill things, climb things, and burn things, then I'm not a man. Yeah, sorry, I don't fit that box, and I'm confident in my manhood. Another one said, I had some college friends use Wild at Heart to justify trespassing because something, something adventure, manliness. We had another Yabber say that some of it resonated with him, some of it didn't, like the part where men need a princess to rescue. And that's where you start to get lost. But see, then we also had these other comments that said, and these are equally as genuine, it's like their experience. So they're saying, I bawled my eyes out through Wild at Heart. I read it when I was 12. All I ever wanted was a dad to be masculine with. Someone else said, men are made to be wild at heart and were created to be the provider and the hunter-gatherers for the family. Society had evolved in a manner that no longer requires this to happen. So there's both sides of the coin. I actually read this book probably upwards of 10 years ago now. Elliot, I think you read it a long time ago as well. Mm-hmm. Bradley, you read it. It's one of your
favorites, he's actually one of my favorite
And then Frank
authors,
and Joel, you haven't read this book, correct?
No, we haven't.
Never read
so
it.
You don't have any thoughts to offer. But Bradley, I know you really love it. And then Elliot, you tend to maybe not so much. You're making some gag reflexes.
Yeah.
Unless you're actually queasy from dinner earlier. I don't know.
I dislike it. I mean, okay, so like you mentioned, Tom, I read this book probably about 10 years ago, maybe even more than that, maybe more like 15 years ago. I was an early teen when I read this book, and I remember very much disliking it because I did not at all resonate with his very, in my opinion, very shallow cardboard cutout view of what masculinity was, and that, and I think the way he talked about it is in a lot of like, always or every, like this is every, the core of every man. And so if you felt like there was some disconnect and you didn't fit that, then you clearly weren't a man. And so his broad, like, or very, very definitive, every, always, these all-encompassing statements that to me felt like, okay, well, I don't resonate with that. I actually want to be rescued. I don't want to go rescue some princess. I want to be rescued. I feel like I need help, you know? And so I felt more like, okay, I don't resonate with who he's talking about or what this is, and so I found it to be very offensive. It didn't at all speak to me at all, and I felt so disconnected. But on the flip side, I can say I do believe that there is sort of an ancient, like, raw, inherent form of masculinity that has been lost and does not exist in our culture today. Mm-hmm. And I think he may have some truth in the sense that the society that we live in and the men in our day and age aren't tapping into their truest form of masculinity. Is it what he thinks it is? I don't know. I don't think so necessarily. But I think that it has been lost. It does need to be recovered. It is in relationship to a woman. I do believe that there's a piece of it that is connected to how a man relates to a woman. And I do think there is sort of a wildness in the sense of maybe a more like naturalistic sense of what a man is. But his version, the way that he talks about it, how he misinterprets the Bible to defend his points, I think are enough for me to say this guy don't know what he's talking about.
So this is a one-page introduction. He has a one-page introduction to the book. So this sets up the book. This will kind of set the stage for this like end part of this podcast. So this is what John Eldridge says in the introduction. I know. I almost want to apologize. Dear Lord, do we really need another book for men? Nope. We need something else. We need permission. Permission to be what we are, men made in God's image. Permission to live from the heart and not from the list of should and ought to that has left so many of us tired and bored. Most messages for men ultimately fail. The reason is simple. They ignore what is deep and true to a man's heart, his real passions, and simply try to shape him through various forms of pressure. This is the man you ought to be. This is what a good husband, father, Christian, churchgoer ought to do. Fill in the blanks from there. He is responsible, sensitive, disciplined, faithful, diligent, dutiful, etc. Many of these are good qualities. That these messengers are well-intentioned, I have no doubt. But the road to hell, as we remember, is paved with good intentions. That they are a near total failure should seem obvious by now. No, men need something else. They need a deeper understanding of why they long for adventures and battles and beauty, and why God made them just like that. And they need a deeper understanding of why women long to be fought for, to be swept up into adventure, and to be the beauty, for that is how God made them as well. So I offer this book, not as the 7 steps to being a better Christian, but as a safari of the heart to recover a life of freedom, passion, and adventure. I believe it will help men get their heart back, and women as well. Moreover, it will help women to understand their men and help them live the life they both want. That is my prayer for you.
I'm already offended. Because
what are you offended by?
I'm offended because he says the heart of a man. And he talks about the heart. And we need permission to live from our heart. Okay, what's the heart? The heart is wicked and deceitful above all else. Like, and everybody has a different heartbeat in terms of what they desire, like, at their core. And so there has to be this understanding that just because your heart longs for something does not therefore mean you ought to have it. And he talks about that, like, we ought to be able to live from our heart. Yeah, well, there's a lot of men who have wicked hearts, and their hearts desire very impure, evil things, or just misguided things or perverted things. And so to say that we just need permission to live from our heart, I think it's just so shallow. I do think that there is a, like Bradley said this actually from the beginning, that there's a standard, and just because you want to do something or you feel it doesn't mean that that's what you can do. And so that has to be defined. And then he said, every woman desires to be fought for. And it's like, I desire to be fought for. You know, like, I desire those things. But that's what my heart desires. So I think putting these, like, really strong black and white dichotomies of this is what a man longs for and this is what a woman longs for. And where is he getting that from? From society? From historical accounts? Because it's a very, like, European fairy tale story. The man is on the noble steed. The woman is trapped in the tower. Mm. And it's like, okay, but biblically, there are women who are out there who are warriors, and they fought for other people. And then you have, you know, like, it's not just this cut and dry storybook. And I get the appeal of that, and it is really desiring. Like, it makes sense, and it fits a lot of our cultural narratives. But is it the most ancient narrative? Is it the truest form of masculinity and femininity? I don't think so. I think it's misguided, and it's too modern.
Okay, so you said a lot. So I don't remember half of what you said, so I'm going to try to respond to what I remember. So,
story of my life.
I'm sorry, but you said way too much. So when he talks about the heart, what I hear is desire. So I do think we all have core desires, especially as males, for, like, when I hear...
Well, I mean, I desire adventure, but there's a lot of women that desire adventure.
Yeah. No, women can't.
It's not allowed. But I do feel like a lot of us do desire venture. You talk about how the heart is wicked. Yes, but I think if you get behind root causes of, or what they are trying to achieve, you will see all of those desires within us. Whether it is adventure or for love or for romance, you would see that mirrored within males in a typical pattern, a particular pattern at a particular time in our lives. I think what the biggest things that stood out to me that John said at the beginning of his book, maybe it was the prologue that you read, and that resonates with me because I'd said this myself, was that he said that the book is about permission, and I resonate with that a lot, especially within this community. Like, I read this book probably 3 years ago. Like, I felt like I was finally validated in these pursuits for a wild adventure. Like, before, it was kind of like a secret thing that I wanted, but wasn't sure if I was just being a stereotypical male, and therefore it was a stupid desire. So when a guy like John Elser says, no, this is deep within you, this is not bad, this is good, and that you wanted, that is also normal. So for him to write a book about, you know, guys' hearts and desires, for me, I felt, again, affirmed in that there's nothing wrong about what you want. It's generally okay to desire these adventures. I feel like a lot of times we allow our brokenness to interpret some things. Not saying that I'm not going to call you broken, because I feel like I don't need to be shouting things in people's faces. But for you to say, like, I desire to be rescued. Well, at what level? Because I feel like sometimes the desire to be rescued comes out of a form of brokenness. So then for you to allow your brokenness to then be an opinion that might be what you, I guess, say is true, I don't think that's fair to assert that, because I just don't believe that allowing something that you did not have in an earlier stage of development in your life to say, because I did not have this, now I desire that, and because I'm desiring something that he says I shouldn't desire means he's wrong. No, it just means, well, maybe you missed out on that in your earlier point in your life.
Bradley, you mentioned permission and how that resonated with you, and that definitely resonated with me. Elliot, I agree with you too. Like, I agree with both of you. I'm gonna be the mediator.
No, you agree with me more though. Just say it.
But the whole notion of having permission to be a man, like, I've always felt like I never had a rite of passage experience. Like, I've worked with kids and youth in various rite of passage experiences, whether at camps or therapeutic boarding schools, and they're super powerful and profound. For me, like, it's the simplest thing. Like, I write about this in the end of my book, Struggle Central, and it was this working at a boys' camp, and this simple notion of taking off my shirt and being shirtless with the other guys. We also had, like, a big mud wrestling thing during camp training with all the other counselors, and I felt like I wasn't properly initiated into that. Like, I couldn't partake with them. I never had the permission to, like, walk the same steps that they're walking, even though I'm a man just like they are. And I resonate with that I think boys, it's really powerful when I've been able to watch, like, little 12 and 13 and 14 year old boys, or even 17, 18 year old boys, go through some sort of organized rite of passage, and they're being told, you are a man and you have the tools and you have the capabilities to be a man, having that permission. Like, that's a powerful thing. And yeah, it's not to say that the heart is completely pure and innocent. Of course there is wickedness in our hearts, but yeah, it's interesting. I resonate with the word permission.
I've not read the book, but I want to point out two things that I've seen here is Elliot referenced the need for, or the desire for, wanting to be rescued, and I just want to, Bradley referenced also being rescued in the fact of that representing your brokenness, and I just want to say that you have been rescued, you know, by God and by Christ. And so that's something that I can see on both sides, the desire for being rescued and the restoration that comes from that. So that's like a very multifaceted type thing, but I don't think that it was delved into in the book from what I've heard.
And I'm not even going to deny the fact that I know that my brokenness has interpreted my heart's desires. I'm not going to deny that. But I also believe that there are a lot of men who don't struggle with same-sex attraction who also are broken. And their desires for, like, this very raw, aggressive, dominant male stereotype also comes out of a brokenness and a trying to make up for a lack of something in their own lives. So I think it, like, goes on all sides. And, like, what Joel just said about, you know, my desire to be rescued in my relationship with God is accurate, because we are described as the bride of the Messiah. So in one sense, we are all described as a feminine, you know, like, we're having this, that side of things in our relationship with God. So
I think the three words that you said, you said raw, aggressive, and dominant, like, those aren't the only points to the book. So I think that caricature is stuck in your head. It is what he's trying to inform us to be, which is not, I mean, that's not the truth at all. There was a part, I think, of a male's character that he is trying to encourage, again, being dominant, not overarching, but being able to be sure of your own stature and of yourself. That is a good trait to have, but that's not the only trait that he is championing.
Sure.
Within a male. But also, I think I have a greater understanding of the message that he's trying to promote, just because I read a couple of his other books. So I might be more accustomed to his writing style and the way he words things. But I just wanted to say this because this is from his book, Fathered by God, which I read and absolutely loved. To know a man's father was in great part to know the man. And us talking about masculinity, is our struggle with masculinity and knowing ourselves because we don't know our fathers. We don't know who we are because we don't know whose we are. We don't know where we are going because we don't know where he came from.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout the book, he talks about, again, more, you know, the masculine journey, which we don't need to talk about now, but... I think that, I mean, if you read more of his book, you would get a clearer picture of manhood, masculinity from his perspective, and it being more than just being in the wilderness and hunting, and whatever else whatever Yabbers combined those three things that he said. Mm-hmm. He's just outside of his frame of manhood.
But what's interesting to me is so many of those things I actually love. I love the wilderness. I love the outdoors. I want to live off the land, be a survivalist. I have this, like, adventurous. And it could be because that's deep within inside. But could that be innate within humans, not just men?
I don't know, because I feel like, I'm talking about stretched in Bible verses, men were made from dirt. So I feel like men have a stronger connection to nature itself then our other half may or may not. So
I would not disagree with that.
As always, we'll let the listeners decide.
My blood boiled.
That's all right. The listeners love the dramatic tension between Bradley and I.
Yeah, so much tension in the room.
In
if
the
you
tent.
Can see me in real life, you'd be like, who's this?
This toothpick. So, yeah. So, y'all go to your local Lifeway and pick up Wild at Heart.
Didn't they close down?
Go to Goodwill.
No, that was Korean.
So, in closing, there's a chapter in Wild at Heart called The Father's Voice. It's all about God as our Father and who we are in relation to Him. And here's a passage from the book. Who can give a man this, his own name? George MacDonald asks. God alone, for no one but God sees what the man is. He reflects upon the white stone that Revelation includes among the rewards God will give to those who overcome. On that white stone, there is a new name. It is new only in the sense that it is not the name the world gave to us, certainly not the one delivered with the wound. But the new name is really not new at all when you understand that it is your true name, the one that belongs to you. That being whom he had in his thought when he began to make the child, and whom he kept in his thought throughout the long process of creation and redemption. Psalm 139 makes it clear that we were personally, uniquely planned and created, knit together in our mother's womb by God himself. He had someone in mind, and that someone has a name. And so, my brothers, remember who you are, a man made from dust, a man made in your father's image. Remember whose voice alone you follow, your father's voice, calling you by name. Remember your name, your true name, the name your father knows, the one you're becoming more and more day by day. His child, his son, a man.
Well, that was a great episode. Thank you all for joining us in the tent.
The crickets are still
going. What a great benediction, Tom.
Thank you, Elliot. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Bradley. Thank you, Joel, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome being manly with you in this tent.
Yeah. Rugged outdoorsiness. At 1 a.m.
in the middle of the woods.
My favorite pastime.
We smell like dirt and fire.
And sweat and grime.
And sweat. Yeah. And bug spray.
And car parts. Like sweat.
Car parts. Mm.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you, car parts. Bradley, do you want to thank them again for us? For
thank you, car parts. And remember, go out and get your defibrillators for your cars because you need them.
Isn't a defibrillator like the thing that you like?
But it's just like a joke because car parts, carburetors, capacitors, amputators, whatever.
Make sure y'all have a spare tire.
Inglets.
So this is now your turn, y'all, to comment on this episode. Go to yourotherbrothers.com/podcast. Find our episode 20 page. And leave a comment about manliness. What is your definition of manliness? And what are your experiences with manliness? And do you like Wild at Heart? Yes or no? Give us your thoughts on this book. We love your feedback on this episode. Thank you guys so much for chatting tonight here in the woods. So for all your other brothers, this is Tom.
This is Joel.
Bradley.
This is Frank.
And this is Elliot. And don't forget, guys, you are not alone. Even the sparrow finds a home.
See you next time, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Other Brothers podcast. Navigate more with us at yourotherbrothers.com and comment on our latest episode at yourotherbrothers.com/podcast. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Your Other Bros. If you'd like to support us financially, consider becoming a patron. Patrons pledge monthly and advance the storytelling efforts of Your Other Brothers. And in return, you gain access to a secret Facebook group, monthly calls with bloggers, fellow patrons, and more. Check out patreon.com/yourotherbros for more information. And finally, if you're new to the show or want to get in touch, shoot us an email at podcast@yourotherbrothers.com. Or you can write to us at Your Other Brothers, P.O. Box 843, Asheville, North Carolina, 28801. We're glad you're with us.